Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Misachim, Daf Yud Beis. We're back on Daf Yud Aleph. Let's finish up our yesterday's Daf and then turn our attention to today's Daf. We are in the middle of a discussion, right in the middle of a discussion on Daf Yud Aleph Misachim regarding Rav Yehuda versus Rav Meir in terms of times of Bedikah. So Rav Yehuda says, when do you do a Bedikah? So again, the Havamin of Rav Yehuda, yes, we saw yesterday, was that you should check three times, one in the evening, once in the morning, and once right before midday. But that's, the Gemara points out, that's not the accepted pshat in Rav Yehuda. Accepted pshat in Rav Yehuda means you check once, but you can only check up until midday of Erev Pesach. You can't check beyond that point in time. And the Chachamim said, no, you can keep checking. You can keep checking the afternoon of Erev Pesach, and according to Tosos, you can keep checking on Pesach itself, and you can check even after Pesach. According to Chacham, you can keep checking. Now, basically, what comes out now, and the Gemara makes this observation, is that according to Rav Yehuda, I can't do Bedikas Chametz once Chametz becomes Aser. That's it, we're done. And the reason why, as we explained yesterday in the Shita of Rav Yehuda, is because the Chacham were afraid, they were concerned, that we start investigating after Chametz, after it becomes Aser, so we're going to come eat it. So in other words, Rav Yehuda's position regarding Chametz was an overly cautious position. Don't check for Chametz after a Zman Iser. Then the Shita of the Chachamim, which let's right now say it's Rav Meir, because the Gemara is going to say that, and the Shita of the Chachamim is, no, you can do Bedikah even after Chametz becomes Aser. Adkan Divrei, the Rav Meir slash the Chachamim, and what's behind that, the Gemara pointed out yesterday, was that, well, they're not concerned. In other words, we're going to check for Chametz, but we're not going to find Chametz and eat it. We're going to find Chametz and destroy it. So therefore, you could do a Bedikah even after the Shas Isser. The Gemara noted yesterday that Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda seem to be doing a flip, a reverse, when it comes to the Isser of Chadash. Chadash is Aser min HaTorah. You're not allowed to eat new grains until the second day of Pesach, until the Karban Omer is brought. And basically, there was a minhag in Yerushalayim where they would decorate the stores with Chadash, with new grains. And on the second day of Pesach, on the first day of Chol HaMoed, so right after the Zman Omer, the Karban Omer is brought, so then we'd be allowed to eat these new grains. It's no longer Chadash, it's now Yashan. That's the... Now this minhag in Yerushalayim, were the rabbis happy with such a minhag? Or were they unhappy with such a minhag? And that, interestingly enough, is a machlokus tanaim. That's a machlokus between Rav Meir versus Rav Yehuda. Rav Meir says, Shelo beratzon chachamim, chachamim, we're not happy with that. Don't handle chadash while it's aser. And Rav Yehuda says, no, beratzon chacham, the chachamim were ecstatic. They loved it. It was a beautiful minhag. They loved it. It was good. And what comes out now is that they did a switch. According to Rabbi Meir, who says, don't handle chadash, that's the same Rabbi Meir who says that even after chametz becomes aser, you could still go and search for chametz. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, who had no problem handling chadash, when it came to chametz, he said, basically, no, don't handle chametz. So, what's the... And the Gemara notes the basic differences between chametz versus chadash. And really explains the positions of Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. Why Rav Yehuda did a switch and why Rabbi Meir did a switch. So, first of all, by chametz, what's the overarching theme behind chametz? We're looking to destroy chametz. So, in other words, we're in a mindset where when we're hunting down chametz, it's not a hunt and eat mission. It's a search and destroy mission. So as opposed to chadash, where there's no mitzvah to destroy chadash, in fact, you want to preserve it so that it becomes mutter, but when it comes to chametz, I'm on a mission of search and destroy, so we're not worried about eating. So that explains Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that even you could search for chametz even after it becomes aser, because my whole mindset is I'm looking to destroy it. That explains Rav Meir. And how do you explain Rav Yehuda? Well, again, Rav Yehuda also, you can give another svar to explain Rav Yehuda. Although Rav Yehuda has no problem handling chadash, but when it comes to chametz, we've been eating chametz all year round. So we're in the habit of eating chametz. Habits are very hard to break. We're in the habit of eating chametz. So if I find chametz on Pesach, I'm going to eat it. So don't search out for chametz on Pesach, because if I find they may eat it, just because I'm a victim of habit. Whereas opposed to chadash, there's no habit of eating chadash. In fact, just the opposite. For the whole year, we've been of the mindset that all the grains are aser. So that's the basic differences between the Isser of chametz and the Isser of chadash, and that is how we resolved the differences between Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir. That takes us to where we are right now. We're on Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph. We're in the Gemara. We are literally halfway down the Amud. It's the last word in the line. Is V'chol. right after the Gemara said Rav Ashi Bedusihi. If you remember, the last thing we pointed out yesterday is Rav Ashi himself attempted to give an answer, but the answer that he gave, the Gemara says, is not an accepted answer. Okay. Now, basically, from here until the next Mishnah, which is coming up in the middle of the next Amud, it's going to be basically we're going to just try to iron everybody out. Meaning, so far we've dealt with the basic issue. Meaning, the heavy lifting is pretty much done. Right? The discrepancy between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda vis-a-vis the Isser of Chametz versus the Isser of Chadash. And we've ironed it out. But now there are a couple more things that need to get ironed out, and so here we go. So you're telling me that according to Rav Yehuda, if it's something that we're in the habit of doing, so people won't restrain themselves. And that's why Rav Yehuda says that when it comes to Chametz on Pesach, don't hunt for Chametz, because we're going to end up eating it. The Gemara says, Va'atana, what about our Mishnah in Shabbos? Second parak of Shabbos, Mishnah we're familiar with. Lo yikol v'adam, Friday night, we say over this Mishnah every Friday night. Lo yikol v'adam shofer shal beitzav v'yimal en ha-shemen, v'yinena b'tzad ha-ner, b'shvil shetehe men na-tefes, v'afilu he shall cheres. Rav Yehuda Matir. So according to the Tanna Kamma, what you can do is make the following. Basically, it's an apparatus where it's a lamp in order to light for Shabbos, which in general is fine. The problem with this apparatus is that the oil and the fire are separated. The oil's is in some sort of utensil, in this case an eggshell, and basically what I did is I pierced a little hole in the eggshell so that the oil drips out. So you're basically controlling the amount of oil that's going into the lamp. And according to the Tanna Kamma, don't do this. Even if the apparatus that I'm using is made out of cheres, made out of earthenware. What's the concern? As Rashi points out, the concern is that because the oil is not in the same bowl as the flame, so I'm going to say to myself as follows. I'm eating my salad, and the salad's a little bit dry, and it could use a little bit more oil, so what I'll do is I'll just simply take off oil from the eggshell or from the other apparatus. And if I do that, what have I just done on Shabbos? Kivui, I've extinguished. This is an interesting form of kivui because I didn't actually put out the fire. All I did was take away some of the fuel for the fire. So maybe it's not kivui, maybe you want to call it garam kivui.
Why would the muksa on Isur have been reviewed that? Who actually had all kinds of muksa?
Right, there may also be, correct, there may also be a muksa element to this discussion as well. Okay, the... Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Anyway, I'm saying it over like Rashi. That right. I'm presenting it like Rashi says it. So good. So in other words, so that and even if it's cheres. Now the chiddush of cheres is that cheres is really dirty. It's really disgusting. Meaning cheres absorbs everything, and so there's a lot of dirt in the cheres. I'm going to be less tempted to take oil away from the cheres, and still the Tanna Kamma says don't do it. Meaning, don't make such an apparatus, and Rav Yehuda matir. And Rav Yehuda says it's fine. And basically, what you see, according to Rav Yehuda, is I am not worried that, in other words, people know that they're not allowed to take oil from such an apparatus. So you see now, Rav Yehuda's position is, no caution. Meanwhile, by Chametz, he's extremely cautious. He's extraordinarily cautious. Gemara gives an interesting answer. Hasam Mishum Chomer Shabbos, Mibdal B'dilei, Mibdal B'dilei. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we're talking about Shabbos over here. People know Shabbos. People understand Shabbos. I don't have to be overly cautious for people on Shabbos, as people are already themselves cautious regarding Shabbos. And so therefore, no one's gonna take from the oil, at least according to Rav Yehuda. Okay, so that is an attempt to iron out the sheet of Rav Yehuda. So the Gemara points out now, we seem to have another discrepancy within Rav Yehuda, within the context of Shabbos. So in other words, again, we just said according to Rav Yehuda, people know the severity and seriousness of Shabbos. People will refrain from doing malachas on Shabbos, and so therefore I don't have to be more cautious for them. They could use that lamp apparatus. That's fine. The Gemara points out, however, we have a braisa, chevel delisha nefsak lo yeh kosho ela onvo. My rope for my pail broke. And I want to draw water. You're allowed to draw water on Shabbos. We spent an entire Masechta talking about transferring the water from Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, but the act of drawing itself is fine. You're allowed to draw water on Shabbos. The problem is that my rope broke, and I need to tie a new rope to my pail. And now we get on to the issur of kosher. You're not allowed to tie on Shabbos. So lo ye kosher ella onvo. So the Tana Kama of this brisa says, fine, not a problem. What you'll do is you'll tie it not with a knot, but with a bow. Making a bow on Shabbos is fine. And Rav Yehuda omer korach alav punda o peskaya o vavashalo ya anvenu. And Rav Yehuda says, you want to wrap something around the pail, that's fine, but you cannot make a bow. That shitas Rav Yehuda, you cannot make a bow. Kashi de Rav Yehuda, de Rav Yehuda, kashi de Rabbanan, ad Rabbanan. So now, basically, we're taking a larger look at this incident, of this psak, and it comes out now, Rav Yehuda, it's difficult. Rav Yehuda, why? What's wrong with making a bow? Meaning, and didn't you say that people know the severity of Shabbos? So why are you being overly cautious for the people? And the Chachamim, who said that you're allowed to make a bow, so again, let's assume the Chachamim is Rav Meir, right? Just the Chachamim of the previous Mishnah, regarding the lamp apparatus. So by the lamp, the Chachamim said, no, don't use such an apparatus because people are going to take the oil. And here the Chachamim are basically letting you make a bow. So lo kasha shemen b'shemen mechlef aniva b'kshira lo mechlef. So the Gemara says, look, for the Tanakama, really simple solution. When it comes to oil, meaning once they take oil for the salad. So what difference does it make whether I take the oil from the salad dressing or I go to the lamp? And so therefore the two are easily confusable. Again, the Gemara's argument is, and so therefore the Chachamim say that's why you can't use a lamp apparatus because you may take the oil. But if I allow a bow is different than a knot. If we allow a bow, that doesn't mean that the next step is people are going to start making knots. People understand the difference between a bow and a knot. And Rav Yehuda lokasha, time is Rav Yehuda lamvishem degazar aniva tukshira. And as far as answering up for Rav Yehuda, that's also really easy. It's not exer derabanan. Rav Yehuda is of the opinion that making a bow is aser min haTorah. We just saw this at the end of Masechta Erevin. Remember, we talked about the instruments and the string breaking on the instrument. And in the Beis HaMikdash, we talked about ways of fixing the strings on the instrument. Obviously, outside the Beis HaMikdash, we're not allowed to play instruments, but in the Beis HaMikdash, they did. How did you fix the instrument in the Beis HaMikdash? So according to Rav Yehuda, you couldn't even make a bow. And the reason why is because according to Rav Yehuda, making a bow is tantamount to making a knot. They're both asur min haTorah. Ela mishum dekasavra aniv gufa kshira hi. So that's shitas Rav Yehuda. So there's no problem. I can't make a bow around the pail because making a bow would constitute an isur da'araisa. Again, a couple more things that need to get ironed out. Rami derabbanan did not. What seems to be another steerer within shitas chachamim. The Mishnah koshin delibe paskaya v'lo bechevel. I can tie my bucket with a paskaya. Some material, but a shirt, whatever, some garment, but not a chevel. Don't tie it with a rope. And Rav Yehuda matir chevel. Rav Yehuda matir and Rav Yehuda allows. Now mechevel damai ile mechevel da'alma. So we can't be just talking about a regular rope because Rav Yehuda matir keshel shechayamahu devada asa levetule. So I understand if you're tying with a rope. You're going to leave it there. It's a keshel shokayama. It should be prohibited. So alapshita de garde. So it must be that when we're talking about tying, we're not talking about tying with a rope, but using garde, some sort of material. The gazra abana chevel de garde out to chevel de alma. So the chachamim are making a gzera, meaning that the reason why the chachamim do not allow you to tie it with a chevel shel garde is because my next step is I'm going to be using a regular rope. So the Gemara says, correct. In chevel bechevel mechlef aniva b'kshira lo mechlefei. So again, if you're talking about making a knot, it's just a question of what material I'm using. So look, I'm making a knot. Once I allow making a knot, so then the next time we have to get our bucket tied in order to drop it down into the well, we're going to make a knot. And I'm going to remember that last time we used garde, and this time we're using an actual rope. So the Chachamim said, just don't get involved in knot making. But if it's the difference between a bow versus a knot, we all understand. Bows are mutter, knots are asar. Okay, good. So that's, again, ironing out the chachamim. Again, right, this is just all literally and figuratively, these are all just loose ends of the Gemara on this discussion of how far gzeras do we make on Shabbos. The Gemara says, What about the following braisa? Bechor she'ach zudam. Let's say you have an animal who's suffering from some sort of hypertension. Okay, I'm not really giving a diagnosis. You understand? I'm not knowledgeable enough. But anyway, but there's some constriction of the blood that's being experienced by the animal, and the animal is the bechor. So their solution back then was bloodlet. Now, in order to bloodlet, that means you're going to have to pierce the animal in order to allow blood to come out. All that's well and good. The problem is the animal's a bechor. The problem now is the following. A bechor, we know, is that in Bizman Beis HaMikdash, you gave the bechor to a kohen and he offers it up as a karban. Bizman is there, it still has kedusha, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, you must wait for the animal to get a blemish. Now, we went through Becharos, we know the basic idea is that the blemish has to happen organically. You cannot make a blemish on a bechor. If you do so, you violate a lav shebetorah. It could be a lav haba mechlal aseh, could be whatever. In other words, but you can't do it. You can't make a blemish on a bechor. So over here, the problem is, I'm about to make a blemish on the animal by piercing the animal, but I'm doing so for the medical well-being of the animal. The animal right now is suffering from this blood clot, and I'm going to try to alleviate it by doing hakaza, by bloodletting.
Isn't that considered a blemish?
No. The blemish, the physical blemishes of the animal have to be external and visible. Right? The Gemara in Becharos goes through at length what exactly they are. But it has to be something which is physical. So, v'bechor she'ach zudam, afilu hu meis, ein mekizin lo dam divrei Rav Yehuda. So, according to Rav Yehuda, right, seems to be a very harsh position, you let the animal die. In other words, by you bloodletting, you're going to be causing a mum to the animal, and it's a bechor, and you're not allowed to do that, so therefore, let the animal die. And v'chachamim amrim, yakiz v'vashalo yatobo mum. And the chachamim say, look, do hakaza, as long as your intention is not to make a blemish, you're only interested in therapy and medically assisting the animal, so therefore you could do hakaza.
If the animal is dead and imminent, is that a trefa already in terms of being bechor?
No. Trefas are very specific. Meaning trefa is internal issues with the animals, but the Gemara, third parak of Chulin, is very specific exactly what a trefa is. So in other words, even though the animal is suffering and definitely has a medical condition, but that by itself is not a trefa. So Yaakov Avachalo Yatobo Bomom. And what's happening over here is Rav Yehuda, once again, is being overly cautious. Right. In other words, the chachamim are flexing the muscle to the extent where don't do it. Don't handle the animal because you're not allowed to be matam mum bechor. And according to the chachamim, it's okay. So hasam mitoch she'adam bal amamono. I mean, in ishar slay b'makom she'ein osim b'mum asal maved b'makom she'osim b'mum. So the Gemara now tries to answer up. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, well, look, Adam Bala Mamona. Look, it's our relationship with our money. You know, in other words, we should have a healthy relationship with our money, but we all understand that people get a little bit crazy about their money. So Rashi says, we're talking about here about the Kohen, meaning he doesn't want the Bechor to die. So this is an explanation of the Chachamim. If we don't allow him to start treating the animal, so he's going to say to himself, I'm not going to let this animal die, and I'm going to lose all that money, and so he's just going to start arbitrarily making a lance into the animal, he's going to make a mum in the animal, so therefore the Chachamim's thought process is, let him try to bloodlet the animal in an area where it's not going to be a mum. Don't ask me, I'm not exactly sure where that area is, but in other words, in an area where the animal is not going to be considered a bal mum, and so therefore, if we don't allow him to do that, then it's going to be too hard a temptation for him to pass up on, not to try to save his animal. So ishar slay b'makom she'ein osim b'mum, asalam evet b'makom she'osim b'mum. V'rabbanan kol shekein di'ilo shari slay klal asay. That was Rav Yehuda. Sorry, that was an explanation, Rav Yehuda, which is don't do anything. And then, I jumped ahead. And now the Gemara gives us the Chachamim's thought process. V'rabbanan kol shekein, di'ilo sharis le'klal asalam e'eved. Okay, that's, so according to Rav Yehuda, both are holding Adam Bawa Mamono, that people get crazy over their money. It's just a question now of what the procedure should be. Rav Yehuda says, just don't touch it. And the Chachamim say, no, if we say that, so then that's too big a temptation. So therefore... Then the animal dies, and then it's not nevela. It's then be nevela.
I mean, it's ironic that they're concerned about a blemish on the animal, but the animal's going to be dying.
Right. In other words, all this because there's an issue in the Torah not to make a blemish on the animal. Right. Okay. Look, and Tzar Bala Chaim. I mean, it's absolutely consideration, but there's a number of.
Why, instead of letting it die, why
not just do shechita? Well, they can't because it's a bechor. As a bechor, our options are either offered on the mizbeach or wait till it gets a blemish.
It's
already in the hands of the kohen.
So why not the kohen with shechita?
Yeah. So if there's a beis hamikdash around, that would be a perfect piece of advice. But what about when there's no beis hamikdash? Now what? So now it's a.
What do they do with any bechor?
So the first thing to do is, like we talked about in the beginning of Bechoros, make it so that there's no Kedushas Bechor. Get a non-Jew as a partner in the enterprise, and that way there's no Kedushas Bechor. That's your first move. And then your second move is that if you don't have that and it has Kedushas Bechor, you're going to have to wait. You wait till it develops a blemish. Okay, all right, let's move on. Just one more loose end that we need to iron out. And that's the following. Vatanan. Sorry. Umi amrin la Rav Yehuda adam bala mamono. Now it comes out that according to Rav Yehuda, people get crazy over their money. Right? I mean, we don't need Rav Yehuda for that. But in other words, Rav Yehuda says that the Chachamim respond to that. And the Chachamim said to the owner of the Bechor, even though your animal's dying, and even though bloodletting may save the animal, but don't do it. Because we know that if you start doing it, you're going to get so crazy over your money, you're going to make a mum on the animal. So simply don't touch it. That's Rav Yehuda. The Hatanan, the Gemara says, what about the following? Mishnah, Rav Yehuda Omer, Ein, the word over here is Mekardin, Mekadrin, Habehema Biyontov Memeshu Osechabura. Okay, combing your animal. Using a fine-tooth comb is prohibited on Yontov. Aval Mekartsefim, but you're allowed to do Kirtsef. Kirtsef also is combing the animal, but using a comb with very wide teeth, and basically it's not going to make any blemishes on the animal whatsoever. And the Chachamim say, don't do any of that. As we just got done explaining, Kidur is a comb that with very fine teeth on it, it's going to make a chabura on the animal. And Kirtsof Gedol Meinosim Chabura. And Kirtsof, the teeth are very wide, and you're not going to make a chabura. So the Hasam, so the Gemara now basically is wondering, according to Rav Yehuda, aren't you worried that people are going to get crazed over their money? And once you allow them to engage in these types of processes of Kidur, then they're going to end up, I'm sorry, of Kirtsof, then they're going to end up doing Kidur in order to take care of their animals. Hasam di shavik le mayas amrina adam bal mamona. Hacha di shavik le tsara ba amahu lo amrina adam bal mamona. So the Gemara says, look, you got to look at the result. In the case of the bechor, what's going to happen? The animal's going to die. Okay, so there, in other words, that's good. That's concerned that people are just going to lose it. They're going to lose their sense of halacha, shomer Torah, shomer mitzvah. Yeah, but my animal's dying. So in other words, so there. You got to give them more of a. The Chachamim have to step in and say, don't touch the animal. Over here, however, we're just talking about tsar. We're just talking about the pain of the animal, and so there, people are not going to get that crazed over their money. Rav Yehuda Maishna Gabi Chametz De Gazer Maishna Gabi Kirtsof De Lo Gazer. So Lechem Belechem Mechlef Kider Be Kirtsof Lo Mechlef. And again. One final loose end to tie up. Rav Yehuda by Chametz is Machmir. Over here, he allows the combing of the animal with the thick comb, not the thin comb. So the Gemara says, very simple, thick won't lead to thin, but bread, meaning we all eat bread. And so once you start hunting for bread, so we're going to end up eating the bread. Okay, Adkan. All right, that really takes us to where we need to be now as we begin today's daf. You see how I did that, by the way? What a great move. In other words, we're still halfway through Yadav on the base, and I'm calling it today's daf. But it is today's daf, as it really now begins a discussion which will take place over the course of today. I did this with you once before, but I feel like let's do this again just so we all understand. Because when we're now going to talk hours, and really it's important just to get your head wrapped around this idea of hours of the day. When we talk about time in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, we are not talking about a minute on the clock, a second on the clock. Time is a range. Okay, and once you understand that, you're going to understand everything. But time is a range. I say the second hour of the day, I'm talking about, now let's do the following. Shaos Manios, not today. Another time. Okay, it's not a promise, but another time. Okay, let's say the day starts at 6, the day ends at 6. So we're dealing with perfect hours. So I say the first hour of the day, I mean from 6 to 7. I say the second hour of the day, I mean from 7 to 8. I say the sixth hour of the day, I mean from 11 to 12. There's no such thing, whenever we're going to talk about time, there's no such thing as 10:30 in the morning. I mean, there is, I understand that. But in the context of our discussion, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, here, Sanhedrin, it doesn't matter where we are talking about a range. You remember that back then, they weren't looking at their watches, nor they were looking at the clock on the wall. So their basic concept of time was, yeah, we're somewhere in the first hour of the day. Right? What time is it now? You look up, you see the sun is over our head, just not at the midpoint, but a little bit to the east. Okay, we're somewhere in the sixth hour of the day. Okay? So time really is a range. Once you get that, I'm telling you, your life will be easy. Rabbi Meir Omer. Now, by the way, when does chametz become aser? Here's such a great question. And I'm going to trip everybody up on this question. Chametz becomes aser when on Erev Pesach? 6 hour, 7th hour, 8th hour, 5th hour? Correct answer is? None of the above. Chametz becomes aser between the 6th and 7th hour. Right? The 6th hour is from 11 to 12. The 7th hour is from 12 to 1. So when chametz becomes aser, you can't point to an hour of the day and say that's when chametz is aser. Because it's not. Chametz is aser between the 6th and 7th hour. Okay? Huh? Oh, good. The answer is noon. Noon is the correct answer. But in the terminology that we're using over the course of today, there's no noon. No, Shashvius means the 7th hour. And the 7th hour is the range from 12 to 1. So you could say, what you could say is the beginning of the 7th hour. You could say that. Or you could say the end of the 6th hour. But an hour is a range. Okay, just, I'm telling you, you get your head wrapped around that, this whole idea, everything else is just going to be, it's going to be easy. Not so easy, but easier. Rabbi Meir Omer Ochlin Kol Chamesh. Rabbi Meir says you get to eat the entire 5th hour. Right? Even the language, we get it now. What does that mean, the whole 5th hour? Meaning, that whole, from the beginning of the 5th hour to the end of the 5th hour, Rabbi Meir says you're allowed to eat. So again, in our perfect day. So that means 6 hours from 11 to 12. 5th hour from 10 to 11. You can eat till 11 a.m., says Rabbi Meir. When do I burn the chametz? Now, beginning of the next hour. Meaning, remember, that 6th hour, that's a dangerous hour. Meaning, because at the beginning of that 6th hour, chametz is still mutter min haTorah. At the end of the 6th hour, chametz is going to be aser min haTorah. So the burning should be done at the beginning of the 6th hour. Right? Give yourself 59 solid minutes to burn chametz. Rav Yehuda Omer, now that's all shitas Rabbi Meir. Rav Yehuda, which is the position we're going to end up following, lahalacha Omer, Ochlin kol arba, you can eat the entire 4th hour. V'tolan kol chamesh, and your tole during the 5th hour of esorfin b'tchil shesh, and you burn the beginning of the 6th hour. So in other words, right, you get to eat chametz the entire 4th hour. 4th hour is from right 9 to 10. 9 to 10, you get to eat chametz. So in other words, you get to eat chametz up to 10 o'clock in the morning. Then during the 5th hour, from 10 to 11, suspension. Right, no eating. It's not aser, but don't eat it. Right? Huh? You can get hana, right. You can get hana from it. And then from, what are you doing at 11 a.m.? That's what you're burning. Va'od amar Rabbi Yehuda, shtei chalos shel toda, psulos menachem agav itzaba. There was a way of communicating what time it was. There were two loaves of bread. Bread, not just bread, but disqualified carbon toda. That was on some sort of platform in the Beis HaMikdash, called Zman Shemenachas, called Am Ochlin. When you see two loaves up there, you were good. We're still in the fourth hour. Nilachas tona lo ochle velo sorfin. One of them is taken off, so now we know we're in the fifth hour suspended period of time, where we don't eat it, but it's not yet asar. Nitlu shteyem is chilukolam sorfin. Now, when both loaves are taken off, that's it. It means we're in the beginning of the sixth hour. Time to burn the chametz. Rabbi Gamliel Omer Chulin Nach Nechal Kol Arba V'Chuma Kol Chamish V'Sarfen B'Tchil Hashesh. Rabbi Gamliel essentially agrees with Rabbi Yehuda in that you're allowed to eat chametz up to the end of the fourth hour. By the fifth hour, already you have to stop eating chametz. So, in other words, he also 10 a.m. becomes the time where chametz now is prohibited to eat. But during the fifth hour, you're allowed to eat truma. Why are you allowed to eat truma during the fifth hour? Because truma, for Kohanim, there's a mitzvah to eat truma. Secondly, there's an isser in the Torah that you're not allowed to be mafsid truma b'yadayim, you're not allowed to destroy truma. So therefore, even though the Chachamim prohibited the eating of chametz during the fifth hour, but that's just a precautionary. The Kohanim, better for them to eat their truma rather than to end up burning it at the beginning of the sixth hour. So if they're afforded one more hour to eat their truma. Okay. Tanan Hasa. And so now, what we're going to do is the following. From here, the Gemara, we're about to start right now, until Yud Beis Amud Beis, this is all by way of introduction. This is going to be an extraordinarily lengthy introduction, but basically, what we're going to introduce is the following. Again, we didn't have watches back then. We didn't have clocks back then. Obviously, whenever time was expressed between one person and another, there's always going to be margin of error. Always. In other words, I ask you now what time it is so I can look at the clock. In the good old days, I ask you what time it is. I don't know. I know, but not with any type of precision. And so we know that there's always going to be a range of, when I say the time, I don't mean this is the time. I mean it's within this. And essentially now, what we're going to be discussing for the next 15, 20 minutes is going to be, what is an acceptable range of error when I say the time of day? What is acceptable? Now, intuitively, we all understand that I know the difference between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Right? Because 11 a.m. sun's in the east, 1 p.m. sun's in the west. So that's going to be easy. But what about the morning? What about the afternoon? What's an acceptable range of discrepancy? Now, this is important for us in terms of chametz. This becomes crucial in terms of providing testimony. When I'm there in court and I'm providing testimony, and the first question that's going to come my way is, as a witness, what time did the crime occur? So now I got to know for a time. Now, along are going to come Edim HaMazimim, right? In other words, another set of witnesses, and said, Imanu HaYizim B'makom Ploni. Well, how in the world could he have been there at that time when he was with us? Well, how are those two times going to align? In other words, what's my acceptable range of discrepancy?
What if it's overcast and cloudy with an internal
Okay, sun? Good. That's an excellent question. The Gemara Yud Beis Amud Beis is going to address that. And by the way, I didn't even need to make it that complicated. Let me go even one step earlier in the process, in the court proceedings. I come forward as one witness and they ask me, what time did the crime occur? And I say, oh, it happened about 10 a.m. And along comes the next witness, because you need two of them, and they ask him, and by the way, you know, they separate us when they ask us questions. And along comes the second witness, and they say, well, what time did it happen? And he says, 11 a.m. Right? Do we have a case? 10 a.m. versus 11 a.m.? So, okay, good. So let's see. Good. Now, that was my introduction. And now let's go through the Gemara's introduction. Tanan Hasam, we learned in the Mishnah over there. Echad Omer B'Shtayim V'Chodesh V'Echad Omer B'Shlosha. Eidus and Kayemesh Ezei Yodeh B'Yibur Shachodesh V'Zei Enu Yodeh B'Yibur Shachodesh. Okay, today is the second day of July. Now, giving the English months are is just nonsensical in this format, because we're talking about the Jewish calendar, the Jewish month. And I say now, right? I don't even know what's today. Still, you know what today's the 24th. Today's the 24th day of Tammuz. Okay, so good. So 24th day of Tammuz. The other witness comes in and says it's the 25th day of Tammuz. Now again, by the way, another bad illustration, because by the end of the month, everybody knows, right? Everybody knows. You got to go early in the month. That's why the Mishnah over here gives the case of second day of the month, third day of the month. Okay, look, months at the time when the calendar was not fixed were all dependent on when Beis Din declared it to be the month. It could be that one witness knew the previous month was Me'ubar. The other witness did not know that. And so it's very easy to have a discrepancy of date of month. One could say two, the other could say three. Acceptable. Totally acceptable. Echad omer b'shloshav, echad omer b'hei, edusam b'teila. But if one says three and the other says five, so that's impossible. Because at most there can only be a one-day discrepancy. And we don't assume that the mistake carries over for 2 months. We do not assume that to be so. But if, and now we go to hours of the day. So I come in and I say, now again, let me not do 10 a.m., 11 a.m., because that's not the way we're going to think. We're now going to be talking about hours of the day. So one witness comes in and says, second hour of the day. The other witness comes in and says, third hour of the day. That's fine. One says third hour of the day, the other says fifth hour of the day. So Rav Meir says that's unacceptable. That can't coordinate when one says three and the other says five. Rav Yehuda Omer Edusin Kayemis, and Rav Yehuda says that's fine. Echad Omer Bechamish Ve'echad Omer B'Sheva Edusin B'Teila. One when it says fifth hour of the day, the other one says seventh hour of the day. Impossible. Impossible that they were looking at the same events. Because Shebechamish Chama Memizrach V'Sheva Chamish B'Mara. Because for that fifth hour of the day, again, the range of the fifth hour of the day is from 10 to 11 a.m., sun's in the east. Seventh hour of the day, what's the range of the seventh hour of the day? Is from 12 to 1, sun's in the west. So Amar Abaye. Now, that is a Mishnah Sanhedrin. So far, so good. That's only after we get through the entire introduction, then the Gemara is going to point to our Mishnah. Okay, so, but still, well into the introduction. Amar Abaye, Kishitim Salam Ladivri Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Torah Velo Klom, Ladivri Rabbi Yehuda Adam Torah Chatzi Sha'a. And so, we start off with Abaye. Now, there are going to be two versions of Abaye. This is version number one. According to the first version of Abaye, you know what the range of error is? For Rabbi Meir, the range of error is zero. Zero. When people tell what time it is, they know exactly what time of day it is. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a half an hour. Now, how in the world did Abaye arrive at that conclusion? So the Gemara explains. L'divrei Rabbi Meir, in Adam Tov, l'oklom ma'isek yava, b'meik b'ktarto o ma'ayot t'las. When did the actual scene of the crime occur? When did the crime actually occur? So it occurred between hours 2 and 3. Okay? What we would call, right, I'm sorry, let me do this in my head. Hour 1 is what, from 6 to 7. Hour 2 is from 7 to 8. So it happened, the actual crime occurred at 8 a.m. Okay? At the end of the second, beginning of that third hour. And when the guy said 2, he meant the end of 2. And when the guy said 3, he meant beginning of 3. So, that's Rabbi Meir. So in other words, people, there's no room for error. People know exactly what time it is. Yeah, but right. In other words, again, just go back to what I said at the beginning of this whole discussion. An hour is really a range. And when he said 2, he meant end of the second. And when he said 3, he meant the beginning of the third. The Gemara in just a moment is going to ask the obvious question. Well, why do we have to interpret them that way? If he said 2, couldn't he have meant the beginning of the second? And the answer is yes. And now it comes out that they're not coordinating and I'm going to kill somebody as a result of that testimony. Later on, the Gemara is going to ask that question. L'divrei Rav Yehuda Adam Torah Chatzi Sha'a. Now, and according to Rav Yehuda, half an hour. Why? Because Ma'aseh Kihava B'Pagad Arba Hava. Let's say the actual crime occurred in the middle of the fourth hour. B'Haidakam Shalosh, and the one who said three meant B'Sov Shalosh. He meant the end of the third, and he was off by 30 minutes. V'Katai Pagad Shaita L'Kamei. V'Haidakam Chamesh B'Tchilas Chamesh. And the guy who said five, he meant the beginning of the fifth hour. V'Katai Pagad Shaita La'acholrei. And he was off by 30 minutes. Okay, that's version number one of Abaye. So right now, margin of error for us timekeepers, according to Rav Meir, no margin of error. According to Rav Yehuda, 30 minutes, margin of error. Okay. Ika da Amre. And now, second version of Abaye. Amre Abaye, kishatim salam, l'div Rabbi Meir, adam toa mashuhu. L'div Rav Yehuda, adam toa sha'a umashuhu. Now, according to the second version, it gets a little bit better, a little more comfortable. According to Rabbi Meir, small margin of error, a minute, maybe two. According to Rav Yehuda, a full hour, and a little bit of change. Really, the incident happened either at the end of the second, the beginning of the third, and the guy who said end of the second got it right on the nose, and the guy who said beginning of the third was off by a minute or two. Good. And l'divrei Rav Yehuda adam toa shao mashu, and according to Rav Yehuda, a person makes a mistake as much as the range, room for error, margin of error is a full hour. Could be that the actual crime occurred end of the third hour, beginning of the fifth hour. One of the witnesses got it right on the nose, and the other one was off by an hour and change. And so let's say the event happened at the beginning of the fifth hour, and the guy who said three, what he meant was end of the third, which is an hour, just a little bit more than an hour off when it actually happened. This is according to Abaye. Okay, so now, range of error according to Abaye. We have two versions of Abaye. Version number one, it's either going to be no margin of error versus 30 minutes. Version number two, a small amount of margin of error, a minute or two, or an hour. Okay. Azar Rav Huna Bered Rav Yehuda Amar L'Shmaita Kamei De Rava. Now, all this got reported over to Rava Amar, and now Rava asks a bomb question. So Rava says, honestly, the guy who said third, how about we just probe him a little bit further? Meaning, I know you're saying third, but do you mean the beginning of the third, the end of the third? And if it turns out when he said third, he actually meant the beginning of the third, it now comes out that the discrepancy between him and the other far exceeds the 30 minutes or the 1 hour allowable margin of error. And now you're going to accept their testimony, even though they're too far apart from one another. You're going to put the two testimonies together, and you're going to kill somebody based on that testimony. V'rachmana amar v'shaftu ha'eda v'tzilo ha'eda. Whenever Beis Din has a proceeding, they have one mission statement. Right? Obviously, the first mission statement is, right, do justice. And then, right, 1B, if you will, is try to get him out of it. Meaning, don't look to kill, look to exonerate. And if there's room for exoneration within the legal proceedings, so then exonerate. So over here, there's a lot of room. He said the second hour of the day, it could be he meant the beginning of the second hour, not the end of the second hour. And now you're telling me that we're not gonna probe any further, and we're not gonna try to exonerate? That's crazy. Elamarava, so Rava says to Abaye or about Abaye, he's wrong. He's wrong about what the margin of error is. And now we're gonna get Rava's margin of error. Amarava Ladivra Bimer Adam Toa Shte Shaos Vichasamashu, and Ladivra Vihuda Adam Toa Shalos Shaos Chasamashu. Range of error now is going to be somewhere between 2 to 3 hours. According to Rav Meir, 2 hours. And according to Rav Yehuda, 3 hours. Ladivra Bimer Adam Toa Shte Shaos Chasamashu, Maisik Yave, Obitzchilashtaim, Obisov Shalosh. Look, when did the actual crime occur? Beginning of the second hour. End of the third hour, and it's okay if one of them is off by just under 2 hours, because that's the range of error, margin of error is 2 hours, just a little bit under 2 hours. And according to Rav Yehuda, the range, the margin of error is 3 hours, just a shade under three. The incident happened either at the beginning of the third hour, the end of the fifth hour, and then one of them made a mistake by upwards of 3 hours. To none. Good. And we're not even done with the introduction yet. We're still introducing this topic. To none. A Mishnah in Sanhedrin. We asked the seven chakiros. Now there are seven chakiros, but if we can, let's reduce it down to two basic questions. Time, place. The Mishnah says, Be'ezah Shavua, what year of the sabbatical cycle are we in? By the way, nowadays, I think we would all strike out. As witnesses, we would all just lose it. Which year of the sabbatical cycle did the crime occur? I don't know. I told you the trick, by the way. Take the year, take the Jewish year, divide it by seven, whatever your remainder is. That's the year of that's the Shemitah year that we're in. Okay. Be'ezah Shana, which year was it? Be'ezah Chodesh, which month was it in? Kama Bechodesh, what was the date of the month? Be'ezah Yom, what day of the week was it? Be'ezah Shah, what hour of the day was it? So all that basically tells us, I know those are six questions, but six questions all yielding one result. Time. And then Ezah Makom, and then place. When was it? Where was it? Those are your chakiros. Umabe chakiros, the bedikos. Now, every question after that is called the bedika. Meaning, what happened? What was the weapon? Right? Where did he hit him? Can you give me any more details? Just basically ask as many details as you can regarding the actual crime itself. But, chakira bedika. What's the difference? Ma bein chakiros abedikos, chakiros amar echa mehemen yodei, do some betela. An answer of I don't know for chakira is just a dismissible answer. Thank you very much for coming. You now are dismissed. Saying I don't know for a bedika, that's okay. It could still hold them as a witness. Bedikos afilu shnei momrim einanu yodim edusin kayemes v'havinan ba. Maishna chakiros and maishna bedikos. Now that's the Mishnah Sanhedrin. Now to respond to a very simple question. Why? Why is an I don't know for a chakira dismissible? But meanwhile, an I don't know for a bedika is admissible. So the Gemara says, "Va'amrin and chakir, samar echad meim, and yodei edus and betela dehavila edus sheata yachol azima, bedikos edus sheata yachol azima." He fine, and the basic difference is as follows: in order for testimony to be admissible, it has to be hazamable. Okay, I made up that word. Okay, it's part of my vocabulary. It should become part of your vocabulary as well. Okay, in order for testimony to be admissible, it has to be hazamable. You have to be open to hazama. Now, hazama is two other witnesses coming in. It's not going to happen, but it could happen. There has to be the potential of two other witnesses coming in and saying, "Imanu hayisim b'makom ploni." How in the world can you testify about the events that you're testifying about when you weren't there at that time and place? You were with us at that time and place. So once I have time and place down, now you're open to hazama. And that's what we need. Edus, by its very definition, has to be hazamable. And if you can't offer time and place, you're not open to hazama, and therefore it's not edus. Bedikos, that's a detail in the actual crime itself. And there, you already, by establishing time and place, you've now opened yourself up to hazama. So now, everything after that is bedikos. Fine. So the Gemara asks a really simple question. Now that I know there's margin of error, and one witness comes in and says that the event happened, let's say, during the second hour of the day, and let's even have the other witness saying the same thing, second hour of the day, and along comes the Edim Hamazimim, and they say, "Imanu Hayisim." Well, hold on 1 second. When the witness is second hour of the day, there's a range of error, meaning it could have been the second hour of the day, could have been the first. Could have been the second hour of the day, could have been the third. And remember, according to Rava, there's 3 hours of margin of error. So when they say second, when they say third, we're allowing for a lot of latitude. So how is it that the Edim HaMazimim can come in and trip them up? But the Gemara gives a very simple answer to a very basic question. Diyavin le'kulei ta'usayu. Because when the witnesses say, the Edom HaMazimim come in and say, they were with us not only during that hour they said the crime occurred, but also within the margin of error as well. We went on a cruise. We went fishing together from the hours of 6 to 12, even though they said the crime happened, let's say, 10 o'clock in the morning. From the hours of 6 to 12, they were with us at the time. That's what the Edim HaMazimim have to testify. Meaning they have to include that range of error. Fine. Le Rabbi Meir Yavin Lai Mitzchil Shav Rishon Ad Sof Chamesh. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, remember his range of error is 2 hours. According to Rava, that is. So according to Rabbi Meir, so from the beginning of Shav Rishona until the end of the 5th hour, v'dinu d'neis of lo mikaritzvei, and the truth of the matter is you can even go earlier, but ela ben yamama leilo tau inshe. But to back it up before 6 a.m. is an absurdity, because the sun's not out before 6 a.m. So you don't have to go that far back. So ula Rabbi Yehuda yavin le mitzchila shav rishon at sof shishis, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, remember his range of error is 3 hours. So in other words, when the witnesses give a time in the middle of the morning, you could really back it up 3 hours, and you can go ahead 3 hours. Now it happens to be that covers you for the entire morning, even more. Uvedinu denesav lo mikaritzvei. And now again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can even back it up earlier. But as we all know, ela ben yamama lelotai inshe. But again, we all know the difference between the morning before the sun rises and the morning after the sun rises. Uvedinu denesav lo kamitzvei ela shebehei chama b'mizrach uvezayin chama b'marav. And it can even go a little bit into the afternoon. But again, we all know the difference between sun in the east versus sun in the west. Okay. Fine. And now, that's all the introduction. Good. That was a long introduction. But now what comes out is as follows. Let's quickly wrap it up, and then let's just go a little bit further in today's daf. What we now have is, what's the acceptable range of error, margin of error, for all of us timekeepers, attempted timekeepers? Comes out that according to Abaye, again, it's Machlok Chim Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, and we're going to have now three interpretations of that machlokus. According to Abaye number one, Rav Meir says no margin of error versus 30 minutes of Rav Yehuda. According to Abaye number two, Rav Meir says a couple minutes versus an hour. According to Rava, the range of error is going to be just a shade under 2 hours for Rabbi Meir, a shade under 3 hours according to Rav Yehuda. Okay? Those are your options out there. And that was all by way of introduction. And now, our Mishnah. Now again, do you get the basic idea of our Mishnah? Chametz is asur when on Erev Pesach? Right, between 6 and 7, at the end of the 6th hour. And so now, let's see if we can plug all this into our Mishnah. Tanan. Rabbi Meir Omer Ochlin Kol Hei V'Sarfen B'Tchilas Vav. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ochlin Kol Dal V'Tolin Kol Hei V'Sarfen B'Tchilas Vav. Le Abaye. Now the question is strongest according to Abaye. According to Abaye, you can eat till 11:59. Because we're all perfect timekeepers. According to Abaye. And according to the second version of Abaye, according to Rabbi Meir, okay, back it up to 11:55. But eat chametz until 11:55. We all know how to watch the clock. And according to Abaye, Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, start with a half an hour. Half an hour margin of error, fine. Stop eating chametz at 11:30. Or, according to Rabbi Yehuda, stop eating chametz at 11 o'clock. According to the second version of Abaye. Amar Abaye, and we'll end here with this today. Amar Abaye, Eidus Masur Lizrizin, Chametz Lekol Masur. Abaye says here, I'm going to distinguish it like this. When you're going to testify in a court of law, not everybody can testify. Okay. First of all, as we all know, you have to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos. But more than that, however, you understand the seriousness and the severity of what's about to happen. Meaning, you're a bystander, you're a witness, but also, you're taking a huge risk. Right? As a witness, it's very possible that you're going to accuse somebody else of murder, and you yourself are also now subject to getting that punishment. It's what's called hazama. So, Eidus is not for everybody. So, to be an aid, I mean, anyone could witness a crime. But then to go to Beis Din and to report in Beis Din and to be an actual witness, you're a zariz. I'm just using the language of the Gemara. So because you're a zariz, so you're afforded a smaller margin of error. 1 minute, 30 minutes, an hour, but you're afforded a smaller margin of error. For the masses, however, which is all of us on Erev Pesach, meaning because the masses have they're the masses. So for the masses, it's going to be a wider range of wider margin of error. An hour for Rabbi Yehuda, sorry, an hour for Rabbi Meir, 2 hours for Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so that's right now the distinction of Abaye as a witness, smaller margin of error because Edom is Rizim. For the masses, wider margin of error because we are the masses. Okay, we'll pause over here. We're only halfway done. Meaning, and now we have to answer for Rava, because Rava also has, Rava's margin of error doesn't fit into our Mishnah. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow. All right, very good.